This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Sean Dooley, Joy Drive's chief bird nerd.
Good afternoon, Sean Dooley.
Good afternoon, Lauren Andrew.
I know this is sad news because we're going to talk about a particular species of birds that are going through a lot of, well, they're keeping the family lawyers in business, aren't they?
Yes, indeed.
What's going on?
This is a fascinating story that appeared in The Conversation recently. And it's about a little, very plain little bird called a Seychelles warbler. Mm-hmm. And to look at them, you wouldn't think there was that much of a backstory. They are really plain, like kind of brown, no real identifying features, except for the fact that they almost went extinct in the 1970s, like a lot of birds in that part of the Indian Ocean on Mauritius and other places. Like, dodos weren't just the only bird to go extinct on those islands. And these warblers were down to, I think, 26 birds at one stage. And there was concerted effort on recovering a lot of those species, and they're doing really well. They still are, but something interesting has happened to these birds as they've recolonized. Now, they're not birds where, like, both sexes are the same looking.
Right.
And so they're not a bird where one sex has the bright plumage, usually males in birds, you know, and it does the big courtship stuff. So sexual selection is not kind of a beauty contest. They're obviously looking for something deeper.
Oh, I wonder what they look for.
Yeah,
I know. Checklist?
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is the thing, I guess, but they're such a well-studied bird that there's been a recovery effort since the 70s. So it's like literally they're all colour banded by the scientists to try and track who's pairing up with who, because one of the things when you get so few birds is you don't want inbreeding that can down the track see the species crash to extinction again. So they know pretty much everyone, and they know that generally, they're monogamous, and a lot of birds are. Some are highly polygamous, some are polyamorous, have all sorts of different things. But this species is, as far as they can tell, generally monogamous. But they did notice they have a divorce rate between the pairs of between 1% a year and 16% a year. And they're trying to work out the difference and why some years there was a higher splitting up of these pairs. And it turned out, when they looked at rainfall records and weather records, that in years of extreme weather, be it extreme drought or extreme rainfall, the divorce rate went up in these birds. And they kind of, like, so we just kind of know the explanation for what the correlation is, but trying to work out exactly why the bad weather means they get divorced, to use a human term, is fascinating, because you would think that it's, well, obviously in extreme weather, nests are going to fail, like either that they might be washed away or the eggs blown out in a storm, or if it's too hot, the eggs could addle or there's no food for them to feed the chicks successfully. And often birds that mate for a long time, they will divorce if they decide the other parent's a dud, that they're not having any success. So that was what they first thought, but it turns out that it wasn't consistent. Some birds that failed did divorce, but other birds that who had a nest failure continued to stay together. And even birds in bad years that did successfully raise chicks, they still found new partners the next year. So it's really intriguing as to why. And then there's probably something else going on, and it might be, you know, it may actually just be things like, perhaps if the birds aren't that close in the first place, like in the extra wet weather, the birds get cold, maybe they need to huddle up more.
Oh, they don't like cuddling. Maybe, oh, my goodness. They're an English background.
Exactly.
Like, we're not used to hugging.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's like one potential theory. But, it could be that just there's something about, extreme conditions, climactic conditions, can just place stresses on animals, not just people, but animals. And that's sort of really, whatever the actual reason is, the takeaway message is one unexpected sort of consequence of global warming and climate change is that it is potentially, you know, another way it will impact birds is it could impact their mating systems, their social and sexual selection hierarchies. So it's just an absolutely fascinating study.
I find that fascinating too. In terms of, I suppose, the social hierarchy, are birds, I mean, you know, if we look at dogs, for example, we know they're social. You know, they like to be in packs. They like to be with us. But what are the different, I suppose, types of social structures that you have in birds? Are they, you've got monogamous pairs, obviously, and then, like you said, there's all different other types of relationships that go on as well. But I suppose, what, like, are birds social or not? Is that a silly question?
Well, no, it's not a silly question. And the answer is pretty much all of the above.
Oh, right.
There are as many, you know, we think that our modern society is a, you know, it is sort of very, you know, I've forgotten the word, but yeah, very adventurous in the way we structure our pairings and our couplings and our social structures. We have lots of different ways of approaching it as humans. But birds are probably even got more extreme. They have, you do have extremely monogamous pairs. You have, as I said, and interestingly, some of the birds where the females are the bright ones and dominant, they are sort of, they're polyandrous and they will mate with several males, lay the eggs and then go off and party again, leaving the males to raise the chicks. Things like the Australian painted snipers like that, and also the plains wanderer, and even emus and cassowaries. Like cassowaries, a classic example. They're very solitary animals, not social at all, but the male and female will mate. She'll lay the eggs and then she buggers off and he raises the chicks as a single parent. But then
we could learn a lot.
Yes, exactly. But there's always a model for any kind of social structure you're after. There's always a model in the bird world to follow. And many birds are highly sociable. For instance, things like, I suppose, flock birds like, you know, cockatoos and things, while they might nest individually, they spend a lot of the year in a flock and they learn from each other and they communicate and they're very intelligent and they will translate information and they have a social hierarchy. And in fact, a lot of parrot sounds, some research has shown that some parrots actually have give each other names. Like they actually within the flock, they always address an individual bird by a certain sound.
They've got
which
names.
The scientists have said is like a name. So, yeah, and this is the thing about science and the discoveries we've made is we're finding out so much that it's both a delight and a surprise, but also sometimes we're just, you know, really shatterers of myths and dreams and tropes. For instance, like a couple, a classic one is the superb fairy wren, which was always
love.
Held up as the paradigm of fidelity.
Oh.
Because the male and female, the male's the bright blue one and the female, and that they're always together, and the researchers said, oh, well, these birds pair up for life, and they're often helped. They do cooperative breeding, as in the chicks from previous years hang around in the
the model family.
They were held up as exemplars of the moral family. You know, they were pretty much, you could imagine Family First having them on their logo, you know. But then scientists went and spoiled the party with DNA testing and genetics coming along. They started doing genetic testing of the chicks of these supposedly monogamous pairs. And what they found is they are dirty little birds. There's a promiscuity rate of above 85% in the superb fairy wren. So pretty much every, you know, almost 9 out of 10 chicks in a nest are not fathered by the father of that by the adult male of that pair. And what they're finding is that the female slips off the nest just before dawn and has a bit of a rendezvous with their neighbour. And so what we now know is that superb fairy wrens, they're not paragons of moral virtue, but that they're still socially monogamous. Those family ties are really strong and that pair bond is really strong, but they're actually physically promiscuous, practically
promiscuous.
You
know what's interesting about this, Sean, is the fact that, you know, we can say that the family bond there itself, like you said, is strong, and it doesn't necessarily matter whether they're monogamous or not. It's about obviously other things that are keeping the bonds together within that bird species.
Yeah, definitely. And it just makes a mockery of people trying to sort of, excuse the pun, pigeonhole animal behaviour into some moral human framework. Because, as I said, you can pick a species to suit your moral beliefs, to endorse them as being natural. And another great example is the swan. The swan's also put up as a paragon of virtue, how they mate for life and they're so in love. And you'll see, and this comes up on Instagram and things like that a lot, you'll see swans that are making a love heart with their necks.
Oh,
have you seen pictures like that where the two swans face off and they dip their heads, and when they touch bills, it looks like they're making a love heart.
Oh.
And that is just for the Hallmark card generation.
and the party that you mentioned before, Family First.
Yeah, exactly. That, oh, isn't that gorgeous? How sweet.
It's meant to be.
But the reality is that's not a male and a female pair. That's actually two rival males trying to battle it out for the affections of the female. And when they do that, I only learned this recently, when they do that heart-shaped sort of thing, that's them basically like, imagine like Mike Tyson and Jake Paul at the start of the start of the fight touching gloves. That's essentially what they're doing. And the swans do are often monogamous, and there is quite a strong pair bond throughout the lives, but there is a divorce rate as well. But the fact is, rather than this just beautiful, chivalrous, romantic love that we think we're seeing, that's actually two male swans having a go at each other. And the actual mating process of the swans is fairly brutal and short and not very considerate. Basically, the male swan, which is quite a heavy bird, gets on the female and they mate in the water. And essentially in the act of copulation, he basically sinks her. If he went on too long, she would drown. There's a necessity of being very wham bam thank you ma'am in that, or else the female swan would actually drown.
Do you know what, Sean, as we're talking, there's a few political parties and a couple of religious groups changing their little emblems as we speak. I think it's fantastic. I reckon we can learn so much about from birds. I think, Sean, do you know what, you could do a sort of love songs and dedication relationship advice show.
Yes.
Quite easily. Use the birds as examples.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. I think you've worked out my next career.
Sean, it's really good to chat with you. Thank you so much for joining us again on Drive Today.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks, Warren.
Talk to you in a month's time. That is Sean Dooley from BirdLife Australia.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.